Hello again, everyone. It is time for No Filter Sports. This is Thursday, March 12th.
I can't make it. I'll talk to you boys later.
Typical, making fun of a very serious situation. The world has become a one-topic world, and it's coronavirus and everything relates to it. And, you know, the sports world has always kind of been an escape. It's always been a separate world. But you know what? An escape. But in a world where you can't even buy toilet paper anymore, sports now, you know, or wipes, it shows that it's part of the real world. It isn't just an escape. And it's been some shocking developments in the last day. It's good we're doing the show on Thursday. Would have been a completely different show had we done it yesterday before the NBA.
Because the three of us might not be here on Sunday. You're damn right as good we're doing the show Thursday.
What the hell has that got to do with anything?
He's making fun. He's joking. He's coughing. He's making light of it.
Well, I guess those 100 people that died would appreciate that.
Well, 12,000 to 60,000 Americans die of the flu every year.
We're not talking
year,
about
Danny.
The flu because nobody knows what this is and where it's going. Nobody has any idea.
Let's go with some facts.
That's one of the most insensitive things, informed things I've ever heard you say, and I've known you for a long time. I watched two different news stations briefly last night, and I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC was looking at the worst case scenario. She said up to 70 to 150 million people could be infected by this.
Right. It was so doesn't mean you're going to get the flu just because you're infected.
No, but 15%. Could suffer serious illnesses, and it could mean I'm just telling what she said, okay? She said it could be up to 30 million hospital beds. I flip over to Fox News to get the other point of view, and the other point of view is that, hey, Trump has got this, nothing to really worry about, it's well in hand. So somewhere, when you look at what happened in Italy, where the entire country is shut down because it got out of control. The key all here is to being a responsible citizen, and that is to stay away from people, to keep your social distance, to wash your hands. But no, we don't know how far it's going to go. We don't know how bad the stock market is already being halted at another 5% down today. So making fun of it or making light of it, I think, is really naive.
Listen,
and I'm surprised that you.
Now you listen to me. I'm making fun of the mindless panic. I'm not making fun of anybody who's going to die because of this virus. Worldwide right now, you know how many people are dead of this virus? Worldwide, 4,366.
That's a lot of people.
12,000 to 60,000 Americans die of the flu every year.
Bob,
it's not the same thing. Just stop, like comparing measles and mumps, for God's sakes.
May I continue, please? Now, the New York Post and the mass media is this ridiculous frenzy. The New York Post had a big headline this morning, Thursday morning. Quarantined couple die of coronavirus hours apart. They were an elderly couple in their 80s.
So they should die?
Attacks the very young, but you wouldn't know that unless you actually read the article. So what is a fact, again, about this is we have never seen this virus before. So I went on the internet. And I found an article by Joseph Brownstein of the ABC News Medical Unit in 2009. While the past decade, he wrote, has seen great strides in medical technology, there were all kinds of novel viruses in the last 10 years that threatened to kill us all. Among the viruses we had never seen as of 2009, the swine flu, the bird flu, SARS. So there is just needless panic about this. It's a fascinating study in collective behavior.
There's one other flu you missed, asshole flu.
Right, like Bryce Harper saying, you know what, I'm just going on with my life. I'm high-fiving. I can't get caught up in this stuff. And you got Typhoid Rudy, of course, Rudy Gobert of the Jazz, who on Monday decided to touch all the microphones and all the reporters and went to hug a guy, and he's got it. So you're never free from the idiots in the world. The responsible thing is now, and what's happening in Italy? They don't have enough beds. to take care of it. So it could happen in this country if we act like idiots and don't quarantine ourselves and pretend like nothing's happening. So yeah, but the fact there's only so many cases so far, because we haven't tested. We don't have the stuff. We're on the bottom of the list of countries. Korea's tested 4,000 out of every million. We've tested 15 out of every million. So if we continue to act like idiots, this will get a lot worse.
So we are acting like idiots, and you two guys have jumped on the idiot bandwagon. I'm giving you facts. You don't want to listen to them.
You find one article from 2009 and you think you've hit the gold mine. Well, you know, when you
didn't
can
listen
support
to what
it,
I said, what
we did
listen.
Said. You spoke about 25 or 30 words and when you said 2009. Bob, just stop it, okay? You may scare some people listening to you. Don't do this, Bob. Don't do this at all. Let's just move along and do sports. I'll give you one good quick story. It's still, I mean, the whole day has got to be wrapped around this virus. Gobert, when they find out he gets the virus.
Gobert. Rudy Gobert.
Well, whatever. Gobert, you know.
Whatever.
McClaney. The thing with Gobert is this. As soon as they tested all the players on both teams, and they took till about 2 o'clock in the morning to get both teams done, one team got back on their plane and went home. The other team is in Utah. If that's where they played last night.
I think Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. Well, then what happens is they have two airplanes at the airport. You're not going to believe this. One airplane is for everybody who doesn't have the virus. The other plane is for anybody with the virus. Can you imagine the money they're spending on this? I mean, they got valuable assets. They got their players and everything else. They're trying to keep these guys healthy. But think about that. By the time all the testing was done, they had two airplanes at the airport.
You know, Bob and I both read this book called Sapiens, and I've quoted it a bunch because it's so true. And their point is, that came out well before this coronavirus. His point was that this is human error. We have the capabilities to control these things if we get on it right away. The Chinese did not. They suppressed it for 2 months because you're right, and people can die for this, but it's under control unless it gets so many people get infected that our hospitals can't handle it.
Right.
Too many people who don't have insurance are flooding the hospitals now, people who are really sick. So, Bob, it's a possibility. Yes, it hasn't happened, but don't think that a worst case can't happen because of human error, because the older you get, the more you realize how stupid human beings really are.
But plagues are also part of the entire history of mankind. And I want to ask you again, I hate to keep bringing up facts about this. I'd rather be hysterical. How many people in the United States so far have died of coronavirus?
It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant because we really don't know. Now, Bob.
No,
we're just
38. 40.
Bob, we're just getting into the testing phase.
Hey, Bob. 2 months ago, nobody had died of it. Okay. Now more people have. It's called flattening the curve. The curve is going up, and the more people that get this, it was gone from one case to 10 to 100 to whatever it is, 1,000. But once we test everybody, we may see how much more is out there. And you know what? I'm 70 years old, and I thought about driving back to Michigan today, taking 2 days to drive and not getting on that plane tomorrow with coughing and hacking people, because the last time I got on a plane flying back from here last month, I got sick because—
All right. I think you know this. I think Denny and Brandon know this, but I don't know that our listeners do. Big article on CNN yesterday about this initial case in New York City of the attorney who was having problems with this, and he managed to infect members of his family. And CNN reports he's infected some 40 people they know of so far. That attorney works on the same floor of the same building as my longtime significant other, Lara. She's an attorney on the same floor.
Okay.
So she's not too worried about this, and she's going to come down to Florida today if they're allowing any planes to leave. And I ain't too worried about it either. I just, if you're given to panic over something like this, that's fine. I'd be more worried about the violence in the streets of Chicago and Detroit, Michigan, and other places like
Bob,
that.
Bob, can you explain to me where all of this panic is setting in, where I don't see it? I've watched hours of television. I've been in a dozen places the last 3 days. No one's even talking about it except, hey, how do you feel? You don't have the virus, do you? That type of stuff. You know, a little bit of this, little
You're
bit
right,
of
Denny.
That.
It's not panic. Okay.
It's called precaution. That's exactly what it's called. People are taking some steps they never thought they'd have to take before. And at this point in time, I think we're beginning to see the light. I'm not saying we're curing anything or healing anything, but at least we've got everybody's attention and everybody's concentrating on this a little bit, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. I would just say this, that again, this apparently affects only the very old, the very young.
Or like those, us. Like us.
The three of
those. I'm getting to the point. Are those whose immune systems have somehow been compromised. So at this point, we have one guy, Brandon, who's very young. He's 35. We have one guy, Danny McClain, who's very old. He's 75.
Come
so
on.
On behalf of Eli Zarrett and myself, I just want to say it's been
Oh, wait a minute. You're not old, huh, right? You're not old, Bob?
We're going to miss you terribly. But Eli and I will just try to carry on.
So, Bob, you're not old at all, huh?
Danny, can I say something?
Please.
All the people that write to this show disliking Bob, it's just multiplied by 10.
Yeah.
Because when we don't like you, then the people out there that don't know you well enough that you do have a few redeeming qualities will really not like you. But look at the trickle that's happened so far. Sure. On Monday, you reported, I hadn't heard it, but you reported that they canceled the tennis tournament. So that was a shock. But since then, it's been one thing after another. Then the Ivy League announces on Tuesday
yep.
the cancellation of its – that seems like such an extreme thing. Who would have guessed that, hey, if I'd said to you last month, you won't be able to buy toilet paper in a month, you go, what? What are you talking about? Because this can escalate very, very quickly. So, you know, and it goes on to where this idiot Rudy Gobert and this moron Bryce Harper are going many steps further than you by saying, not only is it not a panic, I don't even believe it. I don't care. You know, the percentages are in my favor. That's just being stupid.
Well,
I just had no idea you'd be this paranoid.
Paranoid? Who the hell is paranoid?
University of Michigan, for goodness sake. What the hell is up with this stuff?
It's called caution, not paranoia. I don't want to get – Bob, but by the way, even so, the flu, you're right. How many people have the flu? But it's a 0.1%. This is believed to be a 2%. So this could be 20 times yeah. more deadly. So who wants to risk dying? It could happen. It could happen to me.
My refrigerator is not stocked right now. I'm going to the grocery store later on today after the show, and I know – I might die as a result of that. I'm staying inside. That's what I'm doing, and I'm not going out other than on that.
What the hell are you talking about? You've taken too much meds today.
Jeez.
I mean, what is going on with you today?
Danny, you can't go outside your house. Go outside your house and die. That's what the mass media seems to be telling.
Well, Bob, I just drove 30 miles.
Didn't you just say you're not going to go out your house?
I hate to, but I have to eat. I've got to go get some groceries.
Yeah, hey, Bob, I got to get back to Michigan. I got to go on a plane, reluctantly.
Bob and Eli, listen. There's a bigger chance of getting killed on 696 than there is dying from this
just what
virus.
I'm saying, Denny.
Well, just that's what we're saying, talking about. Denny. We're not paranoid. We're not scared of it. We're taking it head on if, in fact, that's what we need to do. Nobody's running away from it.
Right. Denny's saying we're putting our seatbelt on.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's it.
I got another thing for you, Eli. As far as all of these people who quote unquote don't like me, there are a whole lot of people out there who do. So let's put this in perspective, okay?
Well, what you're saying is really, really. I get your point that you don't think we should panic, but as Denny says, it's not that we're panicking. We're just trying to be careful because this could spread if we all aren't vigilant and people who you come in contact and give it to you, plain and simple. That is why last time I flew back from here, I had a 3-year-old next to me that was sick. I got sick. I had a lady coughing across the aisle. And so being near people, we don't know how bad, put it this way, we don't know how bad it's going to be, how bad it's going to get. And the only thing you can do is to show a little caution.
I will tell you how bad it can get. I went to Costco last night, couldn't get anything.
I know.
That's Michigan.
And when I use the bathroom, I hate like hell to use my hand.
Well, you have no choice. So last night,
remember, Danny, and I can say this on this show, if you do that and you shake it once, that's okay. Shake it twice and you're playing with yourself.
Oh, stop it. So Mark Cuban last night, I think we all saw the shot when he was learned at the courtside at a Mavericks game, that the NBA just canceled the season. Here's what he said in a break to the sideline reporter.
It's not about team. It's just about, you know, the country and life in general. You know, we've got the pieces in place. I'm concerned about the, you know, if now that we're not playing games, what about all the people who work here on an hourly basis? You know, we'll put together a program for them, but, you know, there's just so many things.
And I tell you, I really like that comment. He said it's not about the team. Everything in sports is always about the team, right? Right. Bo Schembechler, the team, team. Here he's saying it isn't about the team. It's about the country, and he's concerned about the hourly workers. The trickle-down just in the sports world alone is going to affect so many people. Yeah, I remember when the Gulf War came along. I was at Channel 2, and Fred Heumann was my street reporter. And so the Gulf War, and we were looking at the images on TV of bombs going off in Kuwait, it was, I think, there whatever was happening against Saddam Hussein in 91. And Fred says, how can we call a sporting, a game, a devastating loss anymore when people are dying in a war? I go, you're right. The sports world is an escape, only this time, that was an exterior thing. This time the sports world can't escape. Yeah. It's the middle of it. And we just talked kind of lightly the other day. I asked Denny what it would be like to play with no fans.
Yep.
And we kind of said it as a, you know, hypothetical thing. Well, it's real right now.
And then I started thinking about, after we had talked about that on the way home, and I'm thinking, when I was in Little League, we had 25 people at a ball game. When I was at Babe Ruth in high school, we didn't have anybody at the games except the priests and the coaches of the other team. Even in the minor leagues, we had so few people you could count them probably on two or three hands. So, I mean, getting used to it is not going to happen after you arrive and see 40,000 people in a ballpark, then it makes a big difference. I mean, now every time you go into the ballpark, you want to see 40,000.
Denny, I got one for you. The Tigers played here in West Palm Beach on Sunday and Monday. Yeah. I went to both games, never even thought twice about it. But on the Tuesday Tigers game on the MLB Network with Pittsburgh, they had Joe West at home plate. He almost stole the show. He's our guest on this program later on today, the most famous umpire in Major League Baseball. And Larry Barnett, the longtime American League umpire, joined Matt and joined Dan Petrie in the booth, and they're talking. So Matt Boyd was pitching. You know, he throws strikes around the plate. They asked Larry how it is to work with a pitcher like that. He says, it's just, that's what you want. It's great. And you know what? Jack Morris and Dan Petrie were that way too. And I'll tell you who else was. Denny McClain. Denny McClain would throw a pitch right around the knees. You might call it a ball when it was actually a strike. Denny would never even think twice about it. He'd just get the ball back and throw the next pitch. And guys like that, Morris, Petrie, and Denny McClain, are great. You want to work with guys like that as an umpire.
Well, thank you very much, Bob.
And now I didn't say that. Larry Barnett did.
And now to present the award.
I only work with you on this program.
Here's another one for you. So the NCAA tournament is still on, but there's just going to be no people in the stands. And now Jay Williams, the former Duke star who wasn't able to play in the NBA because of it, I think it was a motorcycle accident, said this. He's actually asking that the NCAA follow suit like the NBA did and suspend the NCAA tournament. Here's what he had to say.
We have to have a big picture perspective here and not be narrow-minded, not think short-term gains. You ever played a game of basketball? If I'm guarding Matt Barnes, I am sweating all over Matt Barnes. He is breathing all over me. And if the NBA has set the precedent about what this is going to be, the NCAA needs to do the same. At least in the NBA, you're incentivized. You can make millions of dollars. But now what you're saying is, as we're still working on this name, image, and likeness scenario, state by state, we're still trying to figure out whether that's going to happen or not. Now you're going to ask players to jeopardize their health.
So his point was, we're sweating on each other. If somebody has it, I'm going to get it. Unless everybody is tested, who knows? And these kids aren't getting paid. It's like getting millions of dollars. And why make them jeopardize their health? Thoughts?
Right. Well, you know, yeah, I got this fact to mention again that I'm surprised you haven't gone there. So your alma mater, Michigan, is playing Rutgers at noon Thursday. By the time you folks hear this, the game will have been over, of course. But they're going to play that big 13-plus Rutgers basketball tournament in empty arenas too. So I'm looking forward to watching the Michigan game on Thursday to see how that turns out. And of course, the NBA season, we've said, is suspended. Utah at Oklahoma City, you talk about game time decisions they talk about in sports with injuries. This is a game time suspension.
15
Everybody's
minutes.
Everybody's in the stands. Utah at OKC, they come out and they announce go home, everybody. The game suspended. The Pistons did play, and they lost to Philly 124-106. Getting back to sports for a moment. Mm-hmm. Do you see Christian Wood had 32 in that game?
He really is.
But I also saw, of course, that Joel Embiid had 30 points and 14 boards. You wonder what his stats would have been had the Pistons had Andre Drummond in that lineup. They have no center to start right now.
Yeah. Well, they're also, if they suspend the season, it doesn't continue. They're number five now in the draft lottery.
That's the point, too. If they don't play it.
With worst by the way, they can all get paid, too, by the way, according to their contracts.
No.
Let me finish because you're going to jump in and screw it up to begin with, all right? Because you're going to find one little story someplace in Guam, and this guy opened this and it blew up. Anyway. What happens is they have a contract, and what the contract says, yes, they can be paid. Now, if it's an act of war, if it's an act of something that serious, the NBA can suspend payments. So that's going to be something that we're all going to see if in fact, they're going to continue to pay these
guys. So, again, let's get back to facts. I just now read an article in the New York Post answering all these questions. NBA players, it said, get game checks. Right now, no one in the NBA is going to get paid because they're not playing the games. And a couple of the guys, NBA players, are quoted as saying, tongue-in-cheek, hope you all saved your money out there. We're not getting paid right now.
There's many other ramifications. I want to get into that. And also, I'm going to give you the definitive Ron LaFleur update after these brief messages, as they say. And the first one is, of course, for Dr. Yaldo, my guy, Michigan's premier LASIK surgeon and premier eye surgeon, who's given me two surgeries, one when I was young and one when I was older. And they were both of life-changing magnitude. And it can be you, too. He's the most prominent eye surgeon in Michigan. And if you're sick of glasses and contacts and the endless hassles that they provide you on a daily basis, it's a lifestyle decision. Not only do you get rid of them, not only do you have to deal with them ever again, reading glasses, regular glasses or contacts, but you will see better without them. You're not looking through plastic. You got no perspective problems. It's really, truly remarkable. You should call and get a free evaluation. There's no obligation. See what he can do for you. It costs you nothing. Just call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
Now, Hall Financial's got a couple questions for you, folks. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have a lingering high interest rate credit card debt? Fact is that rates remain within fractions of a percentage point of their lows over the past 10 years. Recently, Hall Financial has been averaging 10 days from start to finish with our listeners that have applied for a refi on their mortgage. It's a simple process, too. Get started by calling 248-308-5000 or going to davidhallmortgage.com. A lot of homeowners need to reduce their rates, shorten their terms, or take cash out. Hall gets testimonials and thank yous every week from listeners we've sent to Hall, and you can check out the reviews. They are in writing. Hall Financial has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients. Now go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started or call 248-308-5000 and make sure to tell them No Filter Sports sent you. Bob and Denny, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 1467435. Eli and Denny and Bob.
Bobby, I really exasperate you.
Time out. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, like I say, it's when I quoted Fred Heumann about how do you describe a devastating loss when we're at war and guys are really, really dying? Yeah. How do you get it? How do you create a lot of concern about what's wrong with Brooks Koepka's swing now and little things in the sporting world that otherwise.
That's a good story. Brooks Koepka's swing. Did you see what happened with him?
I know he's been hurt all year long. No, I don't.
Here's the deal. So the TPC starts Thursday, one of the great events in golf, yes. As you know. You guys mm-hmm. will be glued, and I will be too, to the tube. Koepka has been so awful this year that he decided recently that he needed some serious help. His coach is Claude Harmon. Mm-hmm. That would be the great Butch Harmon's son. Yeah. So Koepka goes to Claude and says, would you mind if I went to see your dad? Would that be okay with you? He said, sure, go see my dad. So Brooks Koepka spent Monday and Tuesday this week with Butch Harmon. And the quote from Brooks is that Butch Harmon saw four of his swings and immediately realized what the problem was. Mm-hmm. So Koepka says he's got it fixed. We'll see.
No, that's fascinating. By the way, Butch Harmon is the son of Claude Harmon Sr., and there's three generations of Harmons who are the greatest coaches, allegedly, or so as believed in golf history.
And they're like a Johnny Say in a baseball. They understood the mechanics. They understood how the mechanics are applied. That's what they really understand. And once you understand the mechanics, you can help a lot of people.
And it just takes microscopic, maybe that's too big a word or too small a word, differences. I've told the story many times. When Johnny Miller had won the U.S. Open with a 63 in the famous final round at wherever the hell it was. I think it was Pebble Beach. I don't know. Won the U.S. Open on the last day. And 4 years later, I'm at the J.P. McCarthy golf tournament at Wabik. And who's on the green? But Johnny Miller was a guest there. He'd completely fallen off the radar screen in golf 4 years later. This was 77. I go up to him. I go, Johnny, what's the difference of you today and the guy that was winning the U.S. Open? And he says, I hit the ball exactly the same as I ever did. I just don't have radar to the cup when I putt anymore. And you take one stroke per round as a missed putt, and a guy goes from a tournament winner to an also-ran. That's how minute the difference is between the greats and the not so greats.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about Tony Romo and all this money these TV commentators are getting, this stupid money. For my money, Johnny Miller was as good a commentator in any sports event as I've ever heard. I loved listening to Johnny Miller, and I really miss him on the air.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up. I was going to talk about that on the last show, because you see all these arguments that like Draymond Green and Charles Barkley, and Barkley just lets it rip, and there are commentators that do that. The golf guys are so sensitive. When Johnny, his first year, I forget who it was, but somebody had kind of a downhill lie with a 3-iron hitting the ball over the water, and Johnny's comment was, that's a shot you can really choke on. Didn't say he was, and the golfer, whoever was furious. And so Johnny broke the mold, because in golf, you love everybody, and there's no, you're like all on the same team. They all kiss up to each other. And that's why he was so unique. In other, you know, the Barclays, et cetera, the Romos that'll tell you what they think are a whole different breed.
All right, Barry Bonds is one of the most dominant baseball players in history, but he believes MLB has tried to shut him down out of the sport since he retired. He says, it is a death sentence. That's what they've given me. How the hell have they given this guy a death sentence? They let him back in the game after all the cheating and all the admissions and all of the pleading guilty to it, begged to come back into baseball, and now he's got the death sentence? Oh, come on.
Well, Barry Bonds has two problems, Denny, as you well know. First of all, was obviously the steroid issue, okay? Right. But a lot of guys had steroid issues, and they're pretty much accepted now. Barry Bonds
is one
of the three biggest jerks who ever played Major League Baseball personally, and that's why there's all this pushback against Barry Bonds.
I don't know. That may be true, but there's pushback against McGuire, pushback against A-Rod, pushback against any of the guys that did
only
steroids. So whether
Eli
was a jerk or not, doesn't matter. What?
Eli, Bob, all these guys you mentioned came out in one form or another, either it was released, not with their approval, but that they, in fact, were doing steroids. And they proved it, and of course, all kinds of tests were done, and which proved that they were doing the steroids. The guys you're talking about, there's 104 other ones that were never identified. You wouldn't want to know who they are? Before I let him in the Hall of Fame, before you let him in the Hall of Fame, you wouldn't like to know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There's 104 guys that would have never been named.
Yeah, like.
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure how that relates to this current issue with Barry Bonds, because McGuire's a coach, A-Rod's national TV doing the, you know, ESPN and stuff. They don't want Barry Bonds back in because nobody liked him.
You missed my point.
No.
Barry Bonds came back into the game. He was allowed to come back into the game. There's a lot of players that weren't allowed to come into the game. A lot of players can't get a job in the Major League Baseball, minor leagues, or whatever. They can't find a job. But Barry Bonds, through the San Francisco Giants, got back into baseball because the Giants like him, period. I mean, there's no other way of saying it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right about that.
He says, my heart, it's broken, really broken. I say, tough.
Yep.
He says, it's a death sentence. Too bad. He says, if they don't want me, just say you don't want me and be done with it. He said to the Hall of Fame, just be done with it. He doesn't mean that. That's like in the old Western where the guy says, go ahead, shoot me. Go ahead, shoot me. You know, he doesn't want to get shot. And so he's frustrated. Good, Barry. You're frustrated. You got 762 home runs. You didn't need to take steroids. You did. You got what you deserved. End of story. I don't care that your heart is broken.
Yeah. You remember that
broke the time out. You broke baseball's heart. Yeah. You broke the hearts of the Giants fan. You broke a lot of hearts by not being who you pretended to be. Then you lied about it repeatedly. You can kiss my you know what, Barry Bonds.
And then
that article in Sports Illustrated, the importance of being Barry, and how they talked about what a total a-hole he was with his reclining personal chair in his locker, didn't say hello to people, had nothing to do with anybody. What goes around comes around.
Well, I think his biggest thing is that I think he's paranoid about not being recognized by baseball in one form or another. But secondly, you know, 2 years ago, they retired his number. The Giants did. Not baseball, but the Giants did. So I don't know how he comes across with all of these statements. But you're right, Bob. He's just not a well-liked guy.
Yeah, really isn't. So Fox Sports Detroit announced this week that it's going to televise all but one of the Tigers' 162 this year.
Really?
Only the Saturday, July 4th home game against Kansas City will not be on TV on the 4th of July. Could it be that they figure the Tigers will be mathematically eliminated by the 4th of July?
No, I know what it is.
Is that why they did that?
I know what it is. They have the flying Melindas walking across the stadium.
but they're going to televise every game after that.
That's
so
right.
There's no
way. So Fox begins its coverage with the Tigers season opener at Cleveland on March 26th. What's the weather going to be like in Cleveland on that day? MLB should not open until April, then put the northern teams on the road in the south or in domes for the first week to 10 days. Make it comfortable for the fans who are paying big money. It's a no-brainer. And the Tigers' home opener is Monday, March 30th against the Royals. That should be a picnic, too, shouldn't it?
And meanwhile, the Major League Baseball, because the openers are still a couple of weeks away or close to 2 weeks away. March 26th is March 12th, so 2 weeks away. They haven't made decisions yet. And I think in spring training, you're still got people can come to the games, thousands and thousands of people there. So baseball is kind of delaying what may become, the obvious. By the way.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm minding my own business here yesterday in Naples, Florida, and the phone rings and it's Ronnie LaFleur. I go, Ronnie, where were you? Where were you on Monday?
We were Sunday. All where was he Sunday?
He said, you're supposed to call. Denny was supposed to call me Sunday. Now, Denny says he called Ronnie. Ronnie says he didn't call. I don't care. Ronnie called me yesterday. We talked for half an hour. We hadn't talked in over 20 years, and we did relive some old stories, and he is going to be on our show Monday.
Careful. No, don't say it.
I'm going to put myself in the line. He will be there. In fact, he even asked what number I was going to call him on. So he will be there Monday. We joked. So I said, I have to go back and watch One in a Million to find a soundbite. We're going to lead into you with a soundbite of LeVar Burton playing you. Is that his name, LeVar Burton, playing you in jail? And I said, why did you let LeVar play? He's like 5'3". He can't. And Ron says, did you see how he runs where he's flailing his arms? He said, Billy D. Williams, they went after him for the Jays. Would have been perfect to play me, but he wanted too much money. And they went to LeVar because he was hot from the whole Roots thing. But it was actually a well-received movie. It was a CBS TV, a made-for-TV movie. But it was well-received, but not very good.
I think our older listeners watched this, and I know you guys have watched this too. The movie, Fear Strikes Out, based on Jimmy Pearsall about his mental illness. So they had Anthony Perkins actually playing Pearsall, and they're going to go outside, and they're just going to play catch. He's going to play catch with his dad. Yeah. Anthony Perkins was gay. So he actually did this movie, and he threw like a girl, as I said. It was hysterical watching this. Sports
so awful.
Movies. Good. God,
well, they've gotten better since then. I mean, there came a point where they knew you couldn't sell a sports movie without more realistic action. Take Kevin Costner playing that pitcher in that movie about a guy who was a Tiger was very, very good, I thought. So they've gotten a lot better. Dennis Quaid and everybody's All-American look pretty good.
Bull
so,
Durham was – I think Costner played minor league baseball for a while, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did?
I know Kurt Russell did, so he can do sports movies too.
Right, he was a minor league player.
Yeah, Russell, I know, did. Yeah.
So, I joked at the beginning how, usually sports can be the escape from life's serious problems, but now it can't because – the athletes are affected, and the world is a one-topic story right now. Everything relates to the coronavirus. Business.
Let's not make this
pleasure.
Show a one-topic story.
Well, okay. But here's the thing: the MGM Grand opened for sports betting yesterday, and they quoted this guy named Eric Adams, who's there to be, you know, first in line. And he goes, opening the sports book is, quote, like a dream come true.
And guess who was there? Tommy Hearns was there.
I heard Rosemont.
Tommy's all over the papers here today.
Well, they had. I'm sure he bet on a fight because Rosie bet on the Tigers winning more than 56.5 games, and Lomas Brown bet on the Lions.
Is that what it is? Over under is 56 games.
Oh, really? Is that really what it is?
That would make them. Let's see. That would make them 106 or 105.5 and 56.5, and the Lions would be 6.5 wins, 9.5 losses.
What was the over and under with the Lions?
6.5.
Oh no!
What are you taking?
No, I don't know. That's right in the middle.
I don't know.
Oh, that's a there it is. That's the hook. That's the one that gets you. Now you sit there all year long and you wait. Oh man! And when they win one and then they win two in a row, you think, oh man, we're locked down now. We got them now. And then they go 2-14.
Well, you know me, and I'll tell you, if the over under on the FLs were 4, I'm betting the under.
this Republican from Portage named Brant Iden, I say Republican, not in the positive or negative way, but this guy pushed it through. He's the hero for the Eric Adams in the world and the guys that are down there betting, because he pushed it through in Michigan, and he said that the bookies are gone, so nobody's going to get their legs broken anymore for not paying their bets, and he calls gambling, quote, a legal, safe, fun sports venue.
Let me say
until the bankruptcy start, it's going to be legal.
Let me say something. The bookies are still going to be here. They're going to always be here because they also have a tendency to loan somebody money from time to time. But this is a good way to step up. But right now, you have to go to the casino to make the bets. And, you know, most players don't like to make a bet if they have to appear in person. So
That's interesting.
We're a long way.
I did read some quotes from fans in the Detroit papers on Thursday morning saying, now that that's opened, I'm going to be spending a lot more time down here. Now, you guys, again, are the experts, so I'm just asking you questions.
I'm an expert.
I remember when I went to casinos for the first time, I was shocked to find out when a waitress came over to me in Vegas and asked if I wanted a drink. I said, sure. I said, how much do I owe you? She said, oh, sir, if you're playing, alcohol's free. I said, oh, and we understand why. So if you're sitting in a sports gaming room, do they give you free drinks there too, or do you have to pay for your?
It's tips, though. They earn tips. So you got to give them, you know, so instead of paying $4 for a drink or $5 for a drink, you'll wind up paying $10 because now you're a little buzzed. You may have won a bet, and you say, oh, listen, let me give her part of my winnings. And all of a sudden, 3 hours later, you're broke.
Yeah, this is going to be a boon then to a lot of employees in Michigan. And it might be a good thing for Detroit's economy and the state of Michigan. And, of course, well, Windsor has their own casinos. I don't know if Toledo and Northwest Ohio does. But
yeah, they got one. Toledo does, too. They got a beautiful casino down there, How about the university?
I got something.
Go ahead. I was going to do more commercials, but let's do one more story first. Go ahead.
How about the University of Michigan? It's been found out that more than 4 years ago, they knew about Dr. Anderson. And so this thing is just going to get bigger and bigger, and you're just going to see more and more lawsuits. I don't know where it goes from here, but it's going to be big.
What should they have done for you?
We talked about that.
I don't know.
Show.
I don't know. But he was pressed to step down as the director of the University Health Service at that point in time. According to a statement that his former supervisor gave to the campus cops, who had started investigating him more than a year ago following a complaint from another university wrestler. So at least where right now it's in the world of wrestling, it's got to be other sports too, I would assume.
Yeah, well, the doctor was going to Anderson's going to stick his finger up whatever he could find, so it wasn't confined to
What's interesting, though, I don't know if you guys read this, but he was given a demotion yet never lost his job over these kinds of allegations. He was given a demotion.
Right. Bo and Canham then hired him to work exclusively for the sports. And I'll say it again, since the last show, if Bo had known, I can't imagine that he would have allowed this, knowing homophobia and how he protected his players, tried to keep him away from anything dangerous. They watch him who they hang out with. Are they smoking weed? Are they what are they doing? And to let them be abused by a doctor is just beyond.
Yeah, well, anyway, we talked about. Hey, Eli, what are all the fans listening to?
Excuse me, I don't know what
are
about.
All the fans listening to. What are they listening to right now?
No Filter.
Very good. Go ahead, Eli. You wanted to get to the commercial break.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, indeed. I was going to get into the Tom Brady story, but I'll do that after I tell you that for nearly 20 years, Luke Nowacki has worked with individuals, families, business owners like us. We own No Filter Sports to help gain clarity about their financial situation and peace of mind about the future. His number is 248-663-4748. And if you're somebody who spends less than 45 minutes on your investments, and that's what most people do, let Luke do it for you and consult you on every move. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your financial questions and give you peace of mind about retirement, about taking care of your family, and everything else you need to make sure that you are comfortable in life making what you make. 248-663-4748. Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, advisory service offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc., other marketing names, product services referenced here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And, of course, we're talking about that great Lincoln that I'm going to drive down here next year, my Nautilus, when I live in Naples for at least a month. I'm going to make the move. Still do this. It's very convenient doing the show down here. This is great. I see why you like
you're
it.
You're not living in Naples for just a month next year because after that, I'm not going back to Detroit. Well, are you kidding me?
Wait, there is no better place to live from May until October than Michigan.
Detroit.
I will never, ever leave Michigan. Nothing's any better than Michigan, except, like I say, I'm in January, February, March, I'm going to seek an alternative. I've earned that after all these years, so don't make me feel like I'm abandoning my hometown, because I'm not. Anyway, I'm going to take the Nautilus down here, I'm trying to save up my miles. I get $15,000 a year on my lease. In any case, they take care of me at Houghton McInerney Star Lincoln because I'm a loyal customer, and you should be too, because you get the star treatment. Everybody is treated like a celebrity there, and they can afford to do that because Lincolns demand that. It is a luxury car, whether it's the Nautilus, whether it's the Aviator, whether it's the Corsair, which is the latest SUV they created last year, touted as a 2020 SUV of the Year finalist. So it's Houghton McInerney Star Lincoln. Get that star treatment at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield, and you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Now, you guys laughed at me, maybe justifiably so. I could be wrong, but I was saying that Tom Brady may consider going elsewhere. There's a lot of reason for that.
That's not why we laughed at you, and you know why we did laugh at you. Because you actually said that the 49ers should trade Garoppolo even up for a 49-year-old Tom Brady. That's why Denny and I laughed at you.
I think there are certain teams that he would improve despite his age. I said, put away the fact that he's 42, okay? Look at what he can do, his maturity. He still can throw the ball. Where could he help a team that may do better than the Patriots do? In any case, you laughed at me, but now he's launching what's called 199 Productions because he was 199th pick right in the draft. You know, a lot of garbage here. He goes, I know I needed to work hard every day to prove myself. Launching a production company is no different. Yes, it
yes,
is.
Yes, it is.
It's a real difference. It's incredibly different. Where you're not going to do any of the producing, you're the name, okay? You're hiring some great people to do some cool stuff, but don't make it sound like it's you trying to make the Patriots, okay? In any case, his first project is called Unseen Football, which is supposed to be something 3D and amazing. In any case, isn't California the place to be if you're going to be in the production business? Wouldn't it make sense for Tom Brady to go play for the Chargers? Or the 49ers.
Well, with Tom Brady,
do something spectacular. He's already accomplished everything he can accomplish in New England. He's taken him to 9 Super Bowls. He has won 6 of them. He's not going to win another one there. He probably figures or may figure. Well, how cool will it be to go someplace else and do what Peyton Manning did, where he went to Denver and won 2 Super Bowls? Y.A. Tittle was washed up, came to the Giants, of course, too old for most people to remember, took him to 3 NFL championship games when they said he was washed up at age 35, which is the old 42. So I don't think it's out of the realm, although nobody knows, as Brady said to tell Charlie Weiss to say last week, nobody knows what's going on. Don't pretend like you do.
The reference
I don't pretend like I do. It makes sense to me, and you guys are writing it off as impossible.
The references you make are a different game, different time, period. Now, as far as Brady goes, I think there's only one team he could go to besides the Patriots, and I think that's San Francisco because of their line. And I think that gives him a one-upsmanship when it comes to playing the game. But anybody else, I think he's going to get his head knocked off. He doesn't move very well like he used to. And even when he was in his prime, he didn't move very well, but he moved well enough. That was the difference between Tom Brady and the other quarterbacks. And he's a smart guy. That what I still think is the challenge, though, if he goes to San Francisco, he's got to learn all the schemes.
He's not going to San Francisco.
He's got to learn all the schemes. He's got to learn all, no matter where he goes, Bob, he's still got to learn all of the new things that with a football team that they have. And I just don't – Bob, listen, he's just not going to go. The Patriots are – and they want to give him $120 million now. $120
million. By the way, Thursday, which is today, and by the time people listen to it, obviously on Friday, etc., but this vote tonight where the NFL players could be monumental. They're going to decide tonight whether a majority of the 2,000 players votes for this new contract or not. And if not, there's some serious stuff can go down.
I think it's been postponed to Saturday.
Well, it hasn't been. Okay.
I think so.
It doesn't matter. They're all still going to get the dreaded disease anyway. So speaking of football, boys, Curtis Blackwell is back in the news this week. As you well know, the former Michigan State assistant coach is already suing Mark D'Antonio and others, including ex-MSU president Luana Simon and athletic director Mark Hollis. This is going on in federal court for wrongful termination. Now Curtis Blackwell has filed a second lawsuit. And with additional allegations of NCAA violations by D'Antonio, such as Mark ordering a secret taping of an opponent's practice and allegedly speaking to players at other universities who were considering transferring to Michigan State. But the main point of this lawsuit by Curtis Blackwell is this. In a 112-page filing with Wayne County Circuit Court Monday night, Blackwell alleges he was a victim of racial discrimination. He was let go as recruiting coordinator in May of 2017. He was fired because he was black.
He shouldn't do this.
That's why he was fired. It was all racism.
He loses all his credibility.
Mark D'Antonio is a racist. We all know that. You're right, Eli. Any credibility this guy had to begin with is now gone.
Nonsense. How can you say that if when two-thirds of the players on the team are black, how can you say that you were fired for racism? If you were doing the job they wanted you to do and you were supposed to do, it's too bad.
It really is too bad.
But here's the bigger question. I don't know the answer, but the bigger question is, if Curtis Blackwell, because of unique circumstances with D'Antonio, revealed all this, couldn't there be a Curtis Blackwell at almost every other university?
Sure.
How many coaches have accused everybody, all the other coaches in their conference of anti-recruiting? It's been going on forever where they go to recruits and say, you don't want to go there. You've committed to
school X. That's legal.
Well, anyway, I don't know. Yeah, that is legal?
Yeah, of course. This is backstabbing. Everybody does it everywhere. Now, I want to say this also, since we're talking Michigan State football. We had Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler on recently, and we had technical problems here at the house. So you and Denny did this interview, and I told you I was going to catch up with it and listen to what you guys did because I couldn't hear what Sean was saying. Both you guys did a great job. This was a great interview, and I thought that the one point that Sean raised was extremely interesting, more than the others. I'd meant to bring this up myself. Michigan State and the University of Michigan, to name two, should be destination jobs. You don't take either job in football or basketball and think, boy, if I win big here, then maybe I can get the job at and leave. So is Mel Tucker, as Sean asked in your interview, rhetorically, is he going to be that kind of guy at Michigan State? What would keep him from leaving for Alabama when it opens up, being a Cleveland native, Ohio State, or his alma mater, Wisconsin? But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing more to be gained from talking about all this crap. Let's just wait and see what he does. And you did notice, I think, that Ironhead Haywood's kid, Connor Hayward, good running back at Michigan State, he had opted to enter the transfer portal in late September because he didn't want to play for D'Antonio and those guys. He wasn't playing enough. He now, after Mel Tucker got that job, announced he was not going to transfer after all, and he is coming back to Michigan State. So we'll see.
Well, with all the litigation.
How about Jumbo, Eli? Let's go.
With all the litigation going on, it's tough to get the guy to come in here. I mean, nobody wants to be involved because whoever you are, you're going to be eventually involved. You're going to have a conversation with somebody that's going to be relevant to something somebody's going to assume, and you're going to wind up being a part of a lawsuit. Who knows? Maybe you wind up getting sued in a lawsuit or subpoenaed, whatever, but this is not the place to come right now until all this garbage gets out of the way.
Yeah.
I was going to mention, speaking of Michigan, as I was a moment ago, how about Jumbo? Jumbo Elliott, great, great player, yeah. Such a great guy. I think we all knew him well. He played 14 years in the NFL with the Giants and the Jets, and the ex-University of Michigan, two-time All-American, has now been elected to College Football's Hall of Fame. Oh, I'd like to see him at Pro Football Hall of Fame, too.
I saw that. Was it Lomas Brown on that list also?
Yeah, he's on the list, too.
Yeah, very impressive. Yeah. Lomas, who played not just the College Hall of Fame, played 18 years in the NFL. Can you imagine
Lomas
being an offensive lineman and getting smashed on every single play?
Yeah, but that happens, though. You talk about great Michigan tackles. Mike Ken played a long time, and Jackie Slater played, what, 21 years as an offensive lineman in the NFL?
But you're talking about the exceptions at this point in time. It's not like 3,500 guys played for 18 years. I mean, Lomas was a tremendous athlete.
And Jason Hansen was elected, too.
Jason Hansen was elected, too? Good.
Yep.
Good.
You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. The rest of you, of course, stick around. You're going to hear Country Joe West talk about so many issues in baseball. Isn't he close to the most umpiringest guy in history? More games than anybody ever?
It's amazing. The Cowboy, who's a very entertaining person, by the way, you'll enjoy this. The Cowboy is now in his 43rd year working Major League Baseball. And at some point this season, the magic number for umpires is 5,369. That is the number of games the legendary Hall of Famer Bill Clem worked, and Cowboy Joe West is going to pass that number at some point this season, if, of course, there is a Major League Baseball season.
And, of course, other big upcoming interviews, guaranteed 100%, are on the floor. Monday. So I said to Ronnie, I said, you know, your story really, really is amazing when you think of it. He was in jail for 5 to 15, and he had never played baseball before. And I always said to him, getting out of jail for you baseball was a scam. And he says, well, right, it was a scam. And the fact that he pulled it off, that he learned the game and made it to the major leagues, 130 minor league games after they took him totally raw with no experience. Now, he did have flaws as a player. He was not a great fielder, but he could run, and he could hit the ball, and he led the league in singles every year. But he had 4 years from 76 to 79, and what I really want to talk to him also is about, remember we had Jason Thompson on, and he said that 76 season with the Bird was the most, and he was just a rookie who didn't do much. LaFleur had a great season that year, too, and the two of them couldn't have two more opposite guys, Ronnie LaFleur and Mark
Fitterich. Well, that's true, but you dropped off before you mentioned what Jason had said, which was that was the greatest year of his entire life because of the Bird, so we'll talk to Ronnie about that. Can I bring producer Brandon McAfee in here? Because he's the only one of us who is competent to comment on this. It looks like Rob Gronkowski is close to finalizing a deal with WWE, the wrestling rope.
So
according
what?
According to report, he's deep in talks with the pro wrestling promotion. Now, apparently, this guy could pop up, they say, on WWE SmackDown, whatever that is, Brandon, as early as March 30th. But they had some kind of big program in Detroit Friday night, and they've already canceled that due to this, the coronavirus thing. So, Brandon, give us your expert opinion on how Rob Gronkowski will be as a professional wrestler.
Are you kidding me? He's going to be fantastic. That dude has nothing but charisma. He's already big, so he fits in with them.
That's right.
Everybody loves Gronk. Seriously, he's a lovable meathead. He's going to be fine there. They're not going to put him in too much danger. He's already showed up to some events and to a good applause, and he's even attacked people, you know, quote-unquote attacked them in WWE. He's going to be A-okay. It's a good money grab for him. This guy is going to make such a good living outside of football.
I thought I heard him say that he was just going to do one like specialty event. He wasn't going to get on the tour and like wrestle every week or every month at every show.
Well, yeah, he'll pop in here.
No, it's not
going to
be one specialty event. Now, Brandon knows this because he was watching, and you guys weren't, and neither was I. He took part in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at WrestleMania 33 in 2017. Gronk jumping the barricade to help wrestler Bojo Rawley, a close friend of his, win the match.
Well, I'm going back to Ron LaFleur for a minute. You guys jumped right out of the box.
Go ahead.
You know, let me tell you why he became such a good player. Because somebody worked him out every day in there, and they taught him how to hit. They taught him how to run. They did a lot of things. They have a sports department in every prison, everyone. And they got guys who are pretty good who run it. I'm talking about the cops themselves. So they've got people. They got professionals in there. And Ron LaFleur come out of there being a pretty good player. because he had such athleticism. But let's not think, and I don't want people to think, that he just walked out one day through the door and all of a sudden he was a center fielder for the Detroit Tigers because he had so much talent.
But who's going to pitch to him to give show a major league pitching when he's in prison?
You would be surprised. They got baseballs and bats and hammers and knives and guns. They got everything in there. They got more in there than they have outside. I swear to you. And they got
You are the expert among the three of us.
And they are. Oh, Bob, you should have also had a chance at that. But the bottom line simply is he came out ready to play. He wanted to play. That was the biggest thing. And once they stepped him up and started seeing what kind of athleticism he had, it wasn't much of a journey for him. Because, man, like you said earlier, he could fly. He could really fly.
Well, he only played 130 minor league games. He only played, I think, 9 at Evansville in AAA. And then Mickey Stanley broke his hand in July 76 or 75, and they called him up. 74. And then by 76, he was an all-star. So amazing, amazing story. So we should kind of wrap this up.
We got a pressing problem here today, Denny and Brandon. Again, for the second straight show, Mr. Zerrett has to get to his golf tee time. So let's do the mailbag. Let's finish up with that. And then we'll do Cowboy West without Mr. Zero today. Mailbag, first up is Corey. Hey, guys, just wanted to send a message saying I really enjoyed the John Warden episode. I had a chance to meet him, Denny, and Daryl Evans when they were in Nashville recently. I loved hearing their stories. You can tell they love to interact with the fans, and we all appreciate that. Keep it up. Keep the interviews going. As Eli Zerrett says, there's nobody better with fans than Denny McClain.
And you know what? Who's in Denny's league is Dave Roseman. Is great with fans too. We're going to have him on.
He's terrific.
His old teammate of Ron LaFleur, probably a week from today, I would guess.
Right. Well, you can email us yourselves at asknofilter@gmail.com. You can tweet any of the three of us at Eli Zerrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. And he's becoming a regular, the Detroit, longtime Detroit sportscaster Ron Grubbs, who writes, as always, I enjoy listening to No Filter podcast. Wanted to tell us that Jim Campbell was married in 1954 to Helene Grace Mulligan of Lakewood, Ohio. They were divorced in 1969. Campbell later blamed his devotion to the Tigers for that divorce. And Grubber closes by saying, Florida agrees with Eli. He was very relaxed on Monday. I think Grubber said that with tongue in cheek, but go ahead.
He said, I was relaxed on Monday.
You were relaxed on Monday because Florida agrees with you. On the other hand, Eli, here's Mike Rizzo, who writes and says, just listen to the episode. And my gosh, Bob telling Eli to relax had me laughing my ass off. I heard Eli's angry sighs during the hockey talk. Wings actually been winning, and Eli is still annoyed.
You know, I got to tell you something. You are a whole lot more relaxed down there than you are up here. It's amazing the difference in your personality. You know, I mean, did the pimple pop? I don't know, but something happened because,
by the way,
I'm going to tell you something. If you were closer to Bob, he'd be kissing you.
I met with one of our listeners. His name is David Cargetta, who's the guy who said he played golf with you back in Lakeland in the early 70s. Yes. And I met with him on the putting green here.
What is he calling himself? He's got a funny nickname for himself. You remember that?
Cargetta?
Yeah.
He's the putting guru. I think he's the putting guru. But I did try out his new putter, and it's amazing.
Nice.
It's like five times the size of a regular putter. He says that it's legit, and it works.
Well, get us a couple.
I will. I'm going to show you this when I get back.
Okay. In fact, well, come on. Denny McClain, as we all know, Denny McClain was a hell of a golfer. So Denny knows it's not the putter. It's the guy holding the putter.
It's got a lot to do with it.
But it's got something to do with it. Go ahead. What else you got?
All right. By the way, after Mr. Rizzo had written this note to us, it was back to reality for the Wings, who were drubbed by Carolina Tuesday night at Little Caesars Arena. Iffy the Dopester. Okay. No filter anatomy lesson today, Bob. On the last show, I had to cover my Labrador's ears while listening at lunch today. Smiling face with open mouth and smiling eyes. So he loved our little. You have to go back and listen to that show, by the way. Whenever
I went over my head, I have no idea what you're talking about on that.
What are you talking about? We were talking about digital rectal examinations and going to see the doctor and how that works. Comparing it to the vagina monologues for women. That's what Iffy the Dopester was talking about. Now, Eli, you mentioned this earlier in the show. Whenever Brandon sends us our messages the night before we do every program, it always seems like there's at least one person hating on me, as you pointed out. You like to point that out, don't you, Eli? That's all part of the game, and I do like to read some of this hate stuff, too. However, Bud Payton tweets from New York, Bob, I loved your 1990s work as the anchor of MSG Sports Desk and on ABC Radio Speaking of Sports. You are tremendously missed in the NY metro area, but it's terrific to be able to enjoy your excellence on the net now. You were a joy to watch each and every night, your honesty unsurpassed, and I am sure your No Filter podcast with such superb hosts as Denny McClain and Eli Zarrett is an A1 listen with broad appeal. I will be sure to tune in. So there,
We all talk about our previous experiences, the players we knew, the things we did. It seems to shine through, though, that you are a little more obsessed with what you did 30 or 40 years ago and its relevance today, which really isn't, than the rest
not
of
only
us.
That, Eli, That's but who, not only that, but who I did 30 to 40 years ago, too. And I do think about those
and
things.
And every once in a while, like 5 or 10 times a show, his paranoia does sneak out.
Are we done?
Right, and finally, from the ever-present, the omnipresent, unnamed texter, who writes, this coronavirus is going to shut down all of sports for at least a couple of months. You guys won't have anything to talk about. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Here to talk about a lot of stuff today. There's always stuff to talk about, pal. Well, and you can call us or text us, as he did, at 760-89 balls.
Well, Eli will play golf. Eli and I will.
You guys.
Yeah, but Eli and I will have to write more letters about you.
By the way, if you notice, so we get people busting Eli's chops, and we get, as I said, some haters on me. God, Denny has escaped unscathed for quite a while now. Yeah. We haven't had a single note from Denny. We used to.
Let me say this to you.
From Denny, ripping Denny for anything.
But let me say this to you. A number of years ago, I had enough scathing to go on for a long time.
I think the fact that you know, you are the one who is the most obnoxious, and people point to you, Denny and
no,
I.
No, I'm the most opinionated jerk.
No,
off.
You
not
are
most
obnoxious.
I'm opinionated.
That I get complimented all the time for trying to rein you in, for trying to stop you, from trying to halt you from going on
let
about
me ask
this.
You this. You've been trying to do that for 45 years now. How's it going so far?
Anyway, enjoy your interview with Joe West, guys, and I'm going to check out, and thanks for listening to my part. Joe West coming right up.
Cowboy Joe West, most famous umpire in baseball right now, and he's going to go down in history as the most famous. He's in his 43rd year in Major League Baseball. This summer, if there is baseball this summer, he will pass 5,369 games worked in the big leagues, the all-time record set by the legendary Hall of Famer Bill Clem. So, Joe, on behalf of Denny McClain and the absent Eli Zarrett, let me be the first to congratulate you on being elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, you got to do more than that to get in the Hall of Fame.
I don't know. I don't know about that. You more games than any umpire who ever lived?
Well, you know what Eddie Matthews told me one day? He said, you don't make the Hall of Fame by hitting 512 home runs. You hit the Hall of Fame. You make the Hall of Fame by buying those writers drinks.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's like a golfer getting a hole in one. It costs you $5,000 to get a hole in one. Let me ask you the question that I haven't been able to talk to an umpire yet, but you are, of course. My question is, they're talking about monitoring the strike zone with software. Joe, please tell me it ain't so, Joe.
Well, they already do that.
I know
every,
that.
Every umpire is graded in every game, and I think the greatest thing that surprised them was that we don't have an umpire scoring under 95%.
No kidding.
And I think that's a good thing, and I think it makes the umpires more conscious of what they're doing. They don't just go out there and just go through the motions because they're being graded on every pitch. I think that it has helped baseball. I don't know what they can do with this, the robotic umpire. I mean, some of the stuff that the robotic umpire calls, it would be impossible for you to call it and get away with it. You know, it calls pitches that bounce. And even the machine that grades us can't call a knuckleball because it doesn't it doesn't read a knuckleball like it reads a breaking ball or a fastball.
Yeah, and that was my next question. My next question is related to the first. Namely, if a guy has got a pretty good slider and a guy catches just part of the plate, is it going to ring up a strike or not? Do you know?
Well, from everything I've seen, it doesn't call the high and low pitches well. It's pretty consistent on the corner pitches, but it's not very good on the high and low pitches.
The good thing about being at your stage of the game, I watched you work home plate Tuesday in Lakeland for the Tigers-Pirates game. Guys like you just don't get any pushback from players and managers. You might have missed a pitch. Doesn't matter. And that's got to be a great stage to be at in your life.
Jimmy Leland stopped me going out the field. He said, how many did you miss? I said, I've been here for 43 years, Jimmy. I never missed one. I don't call them all right, but I was out there for all of them, you know. So he said, yeah, this was our first park together because he managed the Montgomery down here in the Tiger camp when I came out of umpire school. And we're standing there talking, and I said, yeah, it was 1974. And he said, yeah, we've been arguing ever since. he was kind of making light of it, but this was my first camp.
No kidding.
I'm going back to my roots here because I used to stay in the dorm. We'd walk over to the fields, and I'll never forget.
Oh, you stayed in Tiger. You stayed in Tiger Town.
Oh yeah, back then the umpire stayed in the dorm. Yeah.
You mean to tell me you stayed in the same place I did with all them cockroaches?
Well, we use them for hors d'oeuvres.
Oh my God! You know what? Some of them are big enough to share.
It was one of the nicer camps.
Oh yeah, it was
to start your career. And I mean, some of these places were tough. I know Dunedin was a bad ballpark, still is, but this was one of the Cadillacs of the spring training back then. You know,
yeah, and they spent a fortune the last couple of years renovating.
Oh,
the place.
It's really gorgeous. It really is.
Do you know, you saw the pictures, I think, that they put up in Tigertown? Have you seen that? At least several dozens and dozens of pictures of Tiger history all over the facility, in the offices, in the weight room, in the training room, I mean, in the kitchens. I mean, they've got these pictures everywhere. And I found out the other day, because I do a lot of work with one of the guys over at the Tampa Bay Rays, who put all of these pictures in for the Tigers. They spent almost $500,000 on pictures.
I got to talk about a picture here with the two of you. Joe West, I think a lot of you know this, is a very accomplished country musician.
Yeah.
Amazing. He's performed with Merle Haggard. He's performed with Mickey Gilley. He's performed at the Grand Ole Opry. And a number of years ago, he set to music. He came up with the lyrics along with the former and the late Tigers pitcher Bill Slayback as a tribute to Ernie Harwell upon Ernie's passing. It's a great video montage, folks. Check it out on YouTube, and you'll see a terrific picture of Denny McLean with Ernie Harwell in this.
Well,
you close to Ernie, Joe?
Well, yeah, he would always come by and see us. There was never a game where he didn't stop by the umpire's dressing room and say hello. He's one of the classiest people of the game, and I remember when Slayback came to me, he said, we gotta put this together for Ernie when we're trying to come up with a special song, and Mike McClure had written a song called When the Dodgers Were in Brooklyn. And, a lot of people don't realize this, but when Ernie was first hired, he was hired by the Brooklyn Dodgers.
That's right.
And he was traded for a catcher. The Dodgers sent a catcher to Atlanta, to the Atlanta Crackers, to do a trade for their announcer because Red Barber was sick. And a lot of people don't know that. So he worked for the Dodgers. And here's another interesting story. When he left the Dodgers to go across town to do the Giants, the guy that replaced him was a guy named Vince Scully.
I'll be darned.
A lot of people don't know that, you know. And one of the first people I ever showed that video to was Vince Scully. And he said, what a great tribute. He said,
terrific.
I'm the guy that... He says, you know, when he left, I replaced him. I said, yeah, I did know that. So, but Bill Slayback was not only was he a good pitcher for Detroit, he was a quality musician, and he loved it. He loved Ernie. And
well, what instrument did Bill play?
Oh, he played the guitar.
Oh, I should have had him. I should have had him when we did our keyboard gigs. You know, we should have had him.
Oh yeah. He was a quality,
and you're singing on this
player.
Thing. You're the one who was singing, right, with the Slayback recording?
I was the one that sang. I was the one that changed most of the words to match Ernie's career. And I mean, and I showed it to Al Kaline a couple years ago, and he got a tear in his eye when he saw his rookie card in it. And he actually said, "That's my rookie card." But Denny's in the video. And there's a lot of people in the video. Ted Williams was in the video. Of course, they had the old Dodgers were in it. And
well, let me give you a quick story about Ernie and I. Of course, I'm a keyboard player. I've got a music degree. And the bottom line is I played with Glenn Campbell, I played with the Smothers Brothers and Merv Griffin and some of those guys, some of the real senior guys. And lo and behold, when I went to Ernie, and Ernie and I used to screw around probably once every other road trip and try to write a song or two. If we ever made as much money as the number of songs that we wrote that didn't do anything but entertain us, we'd have made $1 zillion and we'd have owned RCA Records. Anyway, everything that I wrote and tried to write was always a Motown thing. And you know, Ernie wasn't Motown.
No.
So he would convert everything that we did in a Motown, when we laid down the lines, we did it in a Motown style, and it would always come back country and Western.
Because Ernie was an accomplished songwriter, too. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah,
in fact,
was.
Joe, you know, the other day when you were working the Tigers game, they actually started talking about your singing. So they had Nico Goodrum mic'd up at shortstop, and you're a crew member. You're the crew chief, of course. Hunter Wendelstadt was standing right behind him. And they were talking about you on television behind your back. So Gibby says to Nico, he says, ask Wendelstadt if Joe still sings when he's out on his boat. And Hunter says, are you kidding? He sings all the time. He could probably sell some CDs right now out of his ball bag. You carry your CDs in your ball bag, Joe West?
No. You can get them online at MajorLeagueUmpires.com and CowboyJoeWest.com. You can get them there.
So they started this game, and Matt Shepard, the Tigers play-by-play guy, started this game with a tight shot of you working behind home plate. And Matt Shepard takes Gibby by surprise. He asks him off guard, what do you think of Joe West? Gibby, it's like this is dead silence. And Gibby says, well, he's very confident in his calls.
Let me ask you this. There's a very famous picture of you online with you getting taken out by Raj Davis. Did you ever get even with him for that?
Oh, no. He, you know what? He bounced off the catcher, and I was afraid I was going to hurt him when I fell.
Oh.
And I kept telling him, don't move. I don't want to hurt you when I'm trying to get up here. So the next thing I know, the Phillies pitcher's picking me up from behind. He said, are you all right? He's out, too.
Davis was out?
Well, you got a football scholarship to Elon College in North Carolina, your native North Carolina, and you're a big guy.
Yeah.
You got a lot of publicity because during some brouhaha years ago, you actually picked up a player, did you not, and threw him to the ground?
Well, he was taking a swing at me, and so I just decided that he didn't know I had him from behind. So I threw him down on the ground. I went right in front of him. I said, I'm the guy that threw you down. I get up and behave. And he said, oh, okay. I think
who was it? Who was it? And why did he want to take a swing at you?
Well, he didn't know who had him. They were in the middle of a fight, and I pulled him out of the fight, and he tried to swing and hit me with an elbow, and I just spun with him and let him go. You know, something like you would do if you were taking martial arts. You let his momentum carry him through, and when I threw him, he went head over tea kettle. And of course, don't you know the biggest thing they picked up in the fight was me throwing the guy down on the ground.
Oh, yeah, so, of course.
They didn't get Darren Dalton knocking down Daryl Strawberry three times, but they got me throwing down Dennis Cook. So anyway,
you know, there's a lot of words out there that used to describe you. One of them being polarizing, and a number of other things. And I was talking, God, I can't think of who it was I was talking to over the weekend, and I said, you know, listen. You know, you can say all you want. Dean Chance was a very dear friend of mine, obviously, before he died, and just a wonderful guy. I don't know if you ever met Dean, but just one of the greats. But I always, and I told Dean and I told some other guys, especially over the weekend, I said, if he was really polarizing, he wouldn't have lasted 40 years in Major League Baseball, for God's sakes. I said, what are you guys talking about? So I was out there defending you, Joe.
Well, I appreciate it. There's a lot of them that do defend me. There's a lot of them that hate me. And then there's a couple that say, oh, well, I like having him behind the plate because nobody likes him. But I told Tim Kirchin came down early spring and said something to me and asked me, says, what do you think when somebody says, I hate him, I don't like anything about him? I said, well, this is the kind of job that you get into, and you're not going to make many friends. And so half the people hate you all the time, no matter what you do. Because if you make a call, it goes against their team, they're mad at you. So, and I told him, I said, being an umpire is kind of like being an offensive lineman. And I learned that very quickly playing quarterback in college, that without them, you're nothing. Because no one seems to notice them until the quarterback gets sacked or the running back gets dropped behind the line of scrimmage. They don't notice the offensive lineman if everything's going good. They really don't.
And you were a quarterback?
I was a quarterback.
How tall?
That was a few pounds ago, Joe.
Yeah, about 50.
How tall are you, Joe?
6'1".
Oh, yeah, you're tall enough to be a quarterback.
Hey, Joe, get back to this Larry Barnett thing. And the whole thing was just extremely amusing. It was a terrific telecast by Fox Sports Detroit. So the Detroit announcers asked Larry Barnett, all those 31 years he umpired Major League Baseball, who was the greatest player he ever saw in his career? And this is going to be music to Danny McLean's ears because he said Al Kaline. Who was the greatest player you ever saw in your career?
Joe, besides me.
Besides Denny McLean,
Yeah, let's just put him aside.
One of the greatest players I ever saw, and he'll probably never go in the Hall of Fame, was Cesar Cedeño.
Oh, yeah.
He could hit. He could hit with power. Yeah. He could run. He could throw. He did everything. He did everything well. And I was lucky enough to see him just as he was just past his prime, and he was still, I mean, as good as anybody I ever saw. I actually saw Willie Mays in an old-timers game, and I thought, there ain't anybody in the league can play with him now. But probably the best all-around player I saw was Cesar Cedeño, and that might strike people as funny, but nobody saw him because he played at Houston.
Yep.
But he did win a World Series with both the Reds and the Cardinals as a first baseman when guys got hurt and they traded for him late in the season.
Yeah, because that's where he wound up his career in Cincinnati, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that people don't realize that he was a dangerous hitter, and in his younger day he could fly. I saw a lot of great players. I mean, when I came up, Tom Seaver was in his heyday.
Sure.
They just traded him over to the Reds,
right.
and the Reds didn't have any pitching. The Reds had probably the greatest 8 players you'd ever put together.
Absolutely.
But they didn't have any pitching. You know, Rick Rodin told me one day, that's the only team I know can win 100 games and don't have any pitching.
Yep.
And everybody said, well, Sparky Anderson, what a great manager he was. They called him Captain Hook.
That's right.
He was Captain Hook because his pitching was brutal, and he had to take him out before they got killed.
And with all due respect to Sparky, and I told this to his face 1,000 times, he knew nothing about pitching. And that's the reason he got the nickname. His idea of checking the pitcher and how well he's doing is, oh, hell, we'll just hook him. We'll just take him out of the game. I mean, and that's what his whole concept was. That was his whole managing style.
Well, there's a great story on McCarver and Carlton. It wasn't Carlton at the time, it was Gibson. He went out to talk to Gibson, and between hitters.
Yeah.
And Gibson said, the only thing you know about pitching is you can't hit it, get back behind the plate.
Right.
So
that's right.
Tim doesn't like for you to tell that story.
No, not at all. Listen, we've had a lot of new rules coming in with this commissioner. Is there anything he's introduced that's going to help the game?
Well, I think you're going to find this pitching the 3 hitters will speed up the game. But I've been watching sporting events this last winter.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of split screen TV stuff. And I'm wondering why baseball couldn't adapt that so that we don't have to wait so long between innings.
So what do you say? You're in Detroit, you're a Tigers fan, and you're watching a split screen of the Orioles Red Sox, for instance, so you can go back and forth?
No. I'm talking about the commercial tire.
You're watching the Tiger game. Yeah.
So they're doing that now. Starting to do that. What are you going to do with the commercial time?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You don't give them commercial time. They put the commercial in when the inning ends, and
if the players are ready before they get back, then they have a split screen.
Oh, I see.
If the players aren't ready, then the whole commercial shows. I just think that would help the game, but nobody's really talking about that. I think the commissioner's doing everything he can to try to speed up the game. The umpires are trying to get the hitters in the box, which we should be doing anyway. But I think the big problem is when a game goes 4.5 or 5 hours, people lose interest.
I agree with you. But
I mean, the game we had the other day was 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
When I went to the car to go home, they're still sitting in their seat. This game's over.
But here's my problem with that rule, with the three hitter rule and things like that. First of all, I don't think we've done anything that speeds a game up, number one. Number two, I, as a pitcher, there are times that I can grab, and I pitch pretty fast. And so I could turn the ball around in 15, 20 seconds. If the pitcher's going well, he'll turn the ball around a lot quicker. So let's assume I'm turning around and everything is okay. The problem is, once you get yourself in a little bit of trouble, the game slows down. And therefore, you know, if you're going to be held to a 20 or 30 second clock, it's just not going to work, and it hasn't worked. And I don't see any way that they can change it. I think there's one thing they could do, and they don't even talk about it. I think they can raise the mound again, and we'll speed the games up again. I promise you, because we'll get longer stints from pitchers. And guess what? The magic term, complete games. Wouldn't that be something novel?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that they don't. The pitcher pitches 5 innings, they're happy, and that's not the way it should be. But here's one rule that baseball's had, and it just came into being in the middle of your career, and that was the DH. The DH has slowed down the game.
Yes, it has.
And the power pitchers doesn't really bother so much.
Right.
But other pitchers, there's nobody in the lineup to pitch around or to get to the end of the lineup like in the National League. The 7th, 8th, and 9th hitters, you watch the National League, they go right at those guys. 7, 8, 9 hitters, they go right at them. Because the 9th hitter is the pitcher.
Yep, that's right.
In the American League, the pitcher doesn't bat. So they don't go right after anybody. In fact, they're pitching everybody like they're the 3rd and 4th hitter. And that slows down the game. And over the course of a game, you can see it. And over the course of a week, you really notice it.
But
when you get to the playoffs in the World Series, where one league doesn't have the DH and one league does, then it's really noticeable.
Yeah, I can tell you this. I used to challenge myself with the bottom of the lineup. I try to get everybody out with the 7th, 8th, and 9th hitter with 10 pitches or less whenever that string would come up. But
No question.
Do you mind if I
no
ask question. A question here?
Brandon McAfee is our producer. Go ahead, Brandon.
I do have a quick question for you because you've been around the game for a long time, and we've seen such drastic changes in the game itself. And what I mean by that is, compared to the 80s, we're down 1,000 total stolen bases per year, but we're also up 3,000 home runs per year. We're up 20,000 strikeouts. What's been the biggest change in baseball that you've seen from when you started to today's game?
Well, today's relief pitcher's pitching one inning and throwing as hard as he can. Back then, I mean, even Goose Gossage pitched 2 and 3 innings.
Sure did.
Years ago. And you forget. One of the better examples is an old Tiger, Jack Morris.
Yep.
He didn't care how many runs he gave up. He just wanted to win the game.
Yep.
So the guys today are more concerned, and, of course, the agents are pushing them. The big hitters are trying to hit home runs, nothing but home runs, and because they pay more money.
Yeah.
And that's just economics. You remember this guy because you played against him in the World Series, didn't you? Roger Maris.
Oh, yeah.
When Roger Maris went to the Yankees, he was a 300 hitter.
Yep.
They said, we don't want you to worry about hitting 300. We want you to yank the ball down at right field line and hit home runs. Right? So he hit 61 home runs.
Yep.
Right? Well, here's the funny thing. This guy hit 61 home runs. How many times do you think they intentionally walked him?
Oh, man, a bunch.
I mean, Barry Bonds hit 70-some home runs, and they walked him every other at bat.
Yeah.
Roger Maris was never intentionally walked the year he hit 61 home runs.
Honest to God?
No, they never intended. Well, you know why?
Huh.
because Mickey Mantle was hitting behind.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that does help.
Are you going to intentionally want Roger Maris to pitch to Mickey Mantle?
Yeah, that would definitely be a incentive to pitch to Roger.
Hey, Danny, I don't know if you know this, but there was an umpire who really was the genesis of this whole speed up the thing, game thing in baseball. And his name is Cowboy Joe West, because in 2010, he worked a Yankees-Red Sox game and went public with his controversial comments about how ridiculously slow the game was. So, Joe, what was that like?
Well, I got a lot of heat from everybody on that, but most people agreed with me. And it was not that, you know, they were playing slow. It was that they didn't follow the edict that the commissioner had come out with, that we need to pick up the pace. We need to start doing things right. I mean, I think the worst team in baseball for speed up at the time of all that stuff was the Mets, because the Mets were like they were at a Broadway play. They didn't leave the on-deck circle until the announcer announced their name and they played their music and all that stuff. So, but the Mets gave up that to the Yankees and the Red Sox. They did the same thing. I mean, Derek Jeter wouldn't come to home plate unless they were playing his music and they'd already announced it.
No kidding.
And so, that's the thing I used to tell the announcers, don't announce their name until they get in the box. And they didn't listen to me, but I mean, that would have sped up the game, but they didn't do that either. So,
I got two quickies for you. One, the best umpire you ever saw, excluding yourself, of course. And that, growing up, I mean, we all had idols, right? Mickey Mantle, I had Ernie Banks, those kind of guys. Did you, as an umpire, have an idol of some kind?
Oh well, I was lucky because when I came to the big leagues the first time, I was only 23 years old, and one of the best umpires I ever saw was Eddie Vargo. And no one knows his name today.
Yeah, I don't either. I know the name. I never saw him.
Well, I can remember his stance as a young umpire. Vargo would sit there, and he had that one leg way out behind home plate. I guess he thought he kept his balance better that way.
Yeah, well, he and Barlick had taught each other that when you slide back on a pitch, you never miss it and you never chase it. If you go up and down on a pitch, then you have a chance of missing it. So that was how he did it. If the pitch came in, he would back up on that leg that was back behind him so that he stayed with the pitch longer. So it's an interesting technique. But,
did you have an umpiring idol, as Denny asked?
Well, I would think he was one of them. Doug Harvey was one of them. Doug Harvey told me one time, when I came up, I was kind of a hot-headed football player from Elon College. And when people would yell at me, I'd start yelling back. So he came to me one day, he says, you got to understand, these people can't ruin your day. Don't let them ruin your day. And that's some of the greatest advice I ever got, was go do your job. If they get out of line, kick them out or scold them.
I don't want to speak for Denny, but here's what I think he wanted to know. For instance, I was talking with his longtime teammate, Jim Northrup, one time. We were talking about umpiring, and I finally laughed at him. I said, Jimmy, what do you know about umpiring? He laughed, and he said, I only know I wouldn't want to be one. Why does anybody want to be an umpire and put up with the guff you guys do?
Well, see, that's kind of funny, because I really started taking umpiring serious when they wouldn't let me play baseball in college because I had a football scholarship. So I used to go umpire the local high school games in the area, and this guy that was supervisor of umpires for the Carolina League told me work, and he said, you know, if you're going to do this, you ought to learn how to do it right. He took me some clinics, and he actually schooled me before I went to umpire school. And when I went to umpire school, I was more prepared than the other guys that just showed up and didn't know anything about it. And I was lucky because in the beginning, I was pretty good at it, and I was working college games before I got out of college because of this supervisor. And I was lucky, and it seemed to work. And I thought, well, if I don't make it, then I'll go back and coach college football somewhere and everything will be fine, right? So, but then I got promoted the first year. I got promoted the second year. And the third year, the National League took me to spring training.
Well, that was quick.
You've worked six World Series. You've worked any number of no-hitters behind home plate. And I'm asking, Oh, I thought you had many. But anyway, you worked Nolan Ryan's, one of his no-hitters, right? As a kid umpire in the big leagues?
He was at first base.
Was that your biggest thrill? What was your biggest thrill?
Biggest thrill? I don't know. Sometimes you look back on it after they happen.
Sure.
Like when they had to play in Yankee Stadium with Alex Rodriguez, where he slapped at the pitcher's glove and knocked it out of his hand. And we had to change it because it was interference on Alex, right? And at the time, I'm thinking, we are going to get killed. But after we fixed it, and we got all kinds of accolades for doing something right, instead of every time a play happens, they seem to want to blame the umpire for something. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Even the Yankee fans, the next day when we came to home plate, gave us a nice applause.
Sure.
And that kind of thing, you know, kind of sticks with you because you're not used to getting an applause at an umpire. And they respected what we did the night before. They threw everything in the book at us. They were throwing car keys at us. They were throwing beer at us. And because it went against the Yankees. And the next day we come out, and they gave us a nice little standing ovation. And so you look back on stuff like that and you say, now you've seen what your work has done. And that's a good thing.
That's pretty cool. You are also the president of the World Umpires Association. You guys going on strike this year? What's the status of that?
Oh, no. They signed the agreement.
Okay. That's good to know.
I'm not the president anymore. I get to relax a little bit.
Okay.
Well, we could probably spend 2 or 3 hours with you. No question, because I wanted to talk to you about Emmett Ashford and a couple of the other guys that I played with. But we'll get to – maybe next time we'll do that, okay?
Well, I can honestly tell you that this is a good story for you. You remember Ryan Klesko?
Yeah, sure.
Played with the Braves and the Padres. Well,
yep.
We invited him to this golf tournament I used to sponsor at Doral in Miami. And so he came down, and, of course, we had Mickey Gilley there. We had Boxcar Willie. We had Les Dudak from the Allman Brothers. We had Charlie Harrison from Wings. And so he's like a little kid. He's asking them to sign their hat, sign his hat. Like a little kid would, you know. And so that fall, I get a phone call, and I don't recognize him. I pick it up, and it was Ryan Klesko. He said, "Hey, Joe, I want to take you pheasant hunting." I said, "Really? I've never been pheasant. I've been duck hunting, goose hunting, deer hunting, bear hunting. I've never been pheasant hunting." He said, "Yeah, there's about 12 of us going to go out on this piece of property I got outside of Atlanta." And I said, "Really, what 12? And he named off 12 major league ballplayers. And I said, "Let me get this straight. You want me to walk out in an open field with 12 ballplayers with shotguns? Have you lost your mind?"
I knew that was coming.
But it was great talking to you. We'll do this again.
We will, Joe. It's always a pleasure. You take care of yourself, and good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Joe. Joe West. You know, Brandon, you were trying to tell us something during the interview. Were you trying to get us off the show, off the air, or is there news that you want to talk about?
Oh, no. I mean, trust me, there's plenty of news that it's already been breaking.
Canceled the Big Ten basketball tournament. Again, we're taping this Thursday morning, Thursday noon now.
Not just Big Ten, Big 12, SEC. ACC, AAC, SEC, Pac-12, everything's canceled.
Everything.
In fact, I'd be surprised if Joe West actually got to play or umpire this game today in Lakeland, because it just seems that you're an outlier if you're not going to cancel everything. So we'll see what happens. Sports world is turned upside down by the coronavirus.
Yeah, it really is. Denny McClain, you got an appearance this weekend. Are you staying in because of the coronavirus?
Denny is going to Kentucky on a little other business and just going to have a nice weekend doing nothing.
All right.
What do you think?
You enjoy yourself, fans. You guys enjoy yourselves. Have a safe weekend. On behalf of Eli Zarrett, thanks for being with us today on this edition of No Filter Sports Podcast.
Thanks, folks. See you soon. Bye-bye.